It is a very busy morning in the world of sports.
Good morning to you, intelligent, handsome gentlemen.
I despise Cowboy fans.
I'm a little bit perplexed with this situation.
Andy Dalton is nowhere near Dak Prescott.
Oh, here we go.
He's better under pressure. He's better with the deep ball. He's taller. He's better looking.
I think the point has definitively been made. Haftor Bjornsson set a world record in the deadlift, 1,104 pounds. It's 3.5 Marcus Fierces, 5 Dan Orlovskys. It's like 71 of me. Dan put together another quarterback list, and everyone always gets mad when he does those.
The list is bad because you don't have Drew Brees on there.
Who are you going to take off, Marcus?
I thought Swagoo was like the gentle giant on this show.
I would put him over Dak and Tom Brady.
The Cowboys and Bucks, they're not trying to go to the Super Bowl, Marcus. You're right.
The Saints are too, with a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Marcus literally waited until we had 20 seconds left in the show to make his eyes look like that. That will never not be funny to me. Coming up after Get Up this morning on ESPN, First Take with jam-packed football conversation, then SportsCenter, then NFL Live, then The Jump, then at 5 o'clock we preview tomorrow night's UFC 249. At SportsCenter at 6 o'clock, the PTI guys will join the show and cap the day with SportsCenter at 11 Eastern on ESPN and on the ESPN app. It is another full day of sports conversation and coverage here on ESPN after what was a really big night in a variety of different ways. It is good to sort of tangibly look at the schedule and say football is on the way. We've got a football Friday and we have a huge hour coming your way on ESPN starting right now. It is time to get up with the NFL where these two legends will meet week one. One of them got a big break last night. We'll tell you which in a moment. Then, one high profile coach says we need a major change in college football. It's not the one you think. By the way, he's absolutely right. You'll hear that conversation. And don't miss the one, the only, Shaquille O'Neal, live this morning, talking about Mike and LeBron and anything else he wants to talk about. He'll be live with us in this hour of Get Up, which starts right now with Get Up and Go. In the NBA, the Blazers, the Nuggets, and the Cavs all plan on reopening their facilities for individual player workouts today. It's the first day the teams are allowed to do so. The league also is set to hold an all-player conference call today. We'll see what comes from that. The match, Champions for Charity, will feature Tiger, Phil, Brady, and Peyton. It'll take place May 24th in Florida. According to the event organizers, the players will collectively make a $10 million donation to COVID-19 relief efforts. They had a Zoom to preview it yesterday. It was hilarious. Elsewhere, IndyCar will start its season next month in Texas with a night race on June 6th with no spectators. Texas Motor Speedway was the next race on the schedule that hadn't been postponed or canceled due to the pandemic. And then to the main event, the NFL schedule released last night, and lots of little interesting notes to pull out of it, including this. Tom Brady and the Bucks will open in New Orleans against Drew Brees. It'll be the first game in NFL history with two starting quarterbacks who are at least 40 years old. It'll be the most accomplished quarterback matchup ever. The season actually will begin a few days before that. The Chiefs will open their Super Bowl defense Thursday night, September 10th, against Houston. Kansas City also facing Baltimore on Monday Night Football in Week 3. SoFi Stadium in L.A. will open with a Rams home game against the Cowboys, and the Chargers will get their first home game a week later against the Chiefs. And then the Las Vegas Raiders will have to wait a week to open Allegiant Stadium. Their first NFL game in Vegas will be Week 2. That one will be on Monday Night Football against Brees and the Saints. Roger Goodell, the commissioner, put out this statement last night saying that in preparing to play the season as scheduled, we will continue to make our decisions based on the latest medical and public health advice in compliance with government regulations and with appropriate safety protocols to protect the health of our fans, players, club and league personnel, and our communities. We will be prepared to make adjustments as necessary. And I would like to begin there briefly as Dan Graziano rejoins us here along with Bobby and Lou. Dan, you put the thought in our heads early this week. The league will build some things into this schedule that they will be able to move around in the event that they need to based upon the pandemic. What did you see from that last night?
Couple of little things, Greeny. There are no division games scheduled for weeks 3 or 4, so they can play around with that. No one has a bye in the first 4 weeks, which is unusual. So if they have to reschedule the first 3-4 games, they wouldn't be rescheduling bye weeks. And speaking of bye weeks, interesting quirk of this schedule, everyone who plays each other in week two has the same bye week later in the year. So let's say week two had to be pushed back. All those games could be made up during the appropriate bye weeks. And then the final thing, the Super Bowl. Any city that bids on the Super Bowl and wins the bid has to have a contingency plan in place in case the game has to be pushed back. So it is possible, although at this time it is not in the league's plans, that the Super Bowl could be moved back because Tampa has dates later in the schedule where they could host it.
It's remarkable when you think about the complexity of putting that all together. But in the event they need to move things around, and they are hopeful that they will not, then they have some of that in place. Meanwhile, let's take it to the games. You mentioned Tampa. The Buccaneers have five primetime games on their schedule. That is the max. And their head coach, Bruce Arians, loves the expectations.
Well, I love it. You know, I love the expectations and the excitement that that brings. I think our players will enjoy it. And you know, as coaches, you have to embrace it and get ready for it. I think our guys are going to be really, really excited about the season.
So a lot of interesting notes about the Buccaneers schedule, if you look at it. That one at the top is the one that stood out to me the most. They have no cold weather games in November or December. Based upon weather projections, their coldest game would be in Carolina in early November. So that's obviously very good news. At the bottom there, that not as good news with an aging quarterback. He's 43 years old when the season starts. They have four games on short turnarounds. So, Lewis Riddick, let's talk about that. Short turnarounds are tough on everyone. Are they tougher on a 43-year-old quarterback? Do you think four of those in a season is a significant factor in Tampa?
Yeah, obviously from a physical perspective, it's something that you have to be aware of when you're Tom Brady and you're getting up there in age. But I think you also have to rely on the fact that this guy has so much experience and is so in tune to what he needs to get ready both physically and mentally that there's really nothing that you could throw at him that would really throw him off. So I think experience is really what's going to have to be the thing that wins out here over the physical aspects of having some of those short turnarounds. And look, I think Tom Brady understands for someone who has played as long as he has, he will be able to also pass that down to other guys as far as what has helped me during my career as far as rest and recuperation and getting myself both physically and mentally ready to go. And that's something that will permeate through the rest of that organization. Look, Tom is not just being brought in there to really boost them on the football field as far as performance at quarterback. I think his mentality, his championship winning mentality and his experience is also being counted on as something they're going to benefit from. And in this situation, when you have those, you know, disadvantageous short turnaround type of situations, that's really where he's going to really make his mark as well as on the football field.
And then, Bobby, I think it's worth looking closely at the end of their schedule, because if you want to see him sort of go into the playoffs hot, they have the very late bye, and then their last four games after that. So the bye is week 13, then their last four games, two of them are at home, and the two road games, Atlanta and Detroit, are both in domes. So again, no cold weather and a chance maybe to sort of be rejuvenated as he gets into the postseason.
That's a huge piece of it, Green, because as an older quarterback, we remember a guy like Brett Favre and him playing in Green Bay and the frozen tundra and him rubbing his hands around in the dirt. And Tom Brady was kind of that same guy in New England. But as Brett Favre got older, he didn't want to play outside anymore. He wanted to be in the dome. He wanted to be in Minnesota. And I think Tom Brady's in a similar situation now where if you look at him, you know, yeah, he can do it in the cold, but he'd much rather play in the warm. The ball is going to fly farther. Your body feels better. And especially when you have that many primetime games where you're waking up late, they have a couple with some difficult travel, flying back from Vegas on a Sunday night game, flying back from New York after a Monday night game. It's the late nights that begin to take a toll on you when you're not getting to bed until 4 or 5 in the morning, especially after a Monday night game. Your off day essentially evaporates. So I think that late bye week, if the Bucs are in a good position, I think that could pay huge dividends for an older quarterback trying to make a playoff run, because he doesn't care whether he goes 10-6 or 13-3. All he cares about is hoisting Lombardi at the end of the season.
Yeah, by the way, Mike Reese, who covers the Patriots for us, I saw that he noted on Twitter, the Buccaneers and the Patriots don't play at the same time in any of the first 14 weeks of the season. So the fans in Boston that want to watch the Patriots and want to watch Brady will have a chance to do it. Meanwhile, Dan Graziano, let's turn our attention to travel, because that's obviously an important factor here. And you see on the left side of your screen are the teams that are traveling the furthest, and it is Seattle that will have the most travel to do this year, over 29,000 miles traveled. While if you look over on the right side of your screen, and it's all teams from that AFC North, the Ravens only 6,300 miles they will have to travel this year. So that feels like a big advantage for the Ravens. But the Seahawks, who are a team with Super Bowl aspirations, Dan, you were telling us earlier, they like all of that travel.
Yeah, they do very, very well when they have to travel long distances, Greeny. They have 5 games this year in the Eastern time zone. Last year they had 6, including their playoff game in Philadelphia. They won all 6. And in fact, since 2012, the year Russell Wilson was drafted, Seattle is 21-9 in road games played in the Eastern time zone. That is the best winning percentage of anyone in the league in such games, and that doesn't even count the neutral site Super Bowl that they won in New Jersey. Seattle does not mind flying across the country and playing football.
How about the other side of that, Lewis? How about Baltimore with the schedule? They're thinking Super Bowl thoughts, very little travel, very interesting schedule for them.
Yeah, and then when you talk about rest and recuperation and really being able to kind of stay in your normal mode of operation, it couldn't be any better for the Baltimore Ravens because it's really set up for them. Their guys will have maximum amount of time at home, the least amount of time on planes, on trains, in buses, you know, staying in hotels. I mean, these are the kind of things that players really care about. When you're trying to make a championship run, these are the kind of competitive advantage that you're looking for, on top of the fact that this team, as I mentioned before, has done an awesome job of really drafting into strength, fortifying some of their weaknesses. They're set up for a tremendous run, and I think if you're looking at some of those West Coast teams like the Raiders, like Seattle, and like the Rams, you're sitting there going, well, man, how much more favorable could it be for the Ravens? But the thing about it is, and as Seattle has shown, it still comes down to playing the games and really having a plan for whatever the schedule throws at you. And Seattle has had a plan, and now the Ravens, despite the fact that everything is kind of like pointing in their favor, they still have to play, they still have to execute.
Yeah, but it does feel like it went very well for them last night. They will also host Kansas City in what is the game of the year, Week 3, and it'll be on Monday Night Football. Then I want to turn our attention to the high-profile rookie. As we talk about Tua Tagovailoa, and the question is, should he start this season? Well, they may have all sorts of reasons not to start him right off the bat if they were planning to, because they open against the Patriots and the Bills, who were 1-2 in defense as far as points allowed last year. So, Bobby, does that influence in any way you think you're thinking, if you're the Dolphins, as to whether or not Tua starts the season?
Well, first and foremost, you want to make sure that he's going to be healthy and that he understands what's going on and the expectations of what he's going to have to do out there. And so naturally, you try to look at their schedule and try to find a point to slide him in. So at the beginning, okay, that's tough. We can go with a veteran there, Ryan Fitzpatrick. He's played against these teams. He won't necessarily be intimidated by it. But if you look at the end of their schedule, they've got New England, they've got Kansas City, they've got Buffalo there, 3 of their last 4 games. So it's not like you could slide him in after the bye week at the end of the season and feel good about it. At some point, they're just going to have to tear the Band-Aid off and they feel like this season is what it is and then begin to move forward with him, because I don't see a natural landing spot where you could put Tua in there and say, hey, here's a couple easier games against more manageable defenses, Brian Flores. Now push him in and he'll be okay to go.
What do you think, Lewis? Does he play this year?
I don't think so. I think they really, regardless of the schedule, Greeny, need to go ahead and give him this redshirt year in 2020 and then unveil him in 2021. It's just too hard to sit there and try and pick and choose where do we kind of like take the cover off and put him in there. Because look, it looks good right now. It may look good right now as far as you trying to project who are going to be the easy games, who are going to be the hard games. But we know that the season changes very quickly. Teams wind up being stronger. Teams wind up being weaker than we projected. So I think for Tua, you just need to take a blanket approach and say, hey, look, barring a catastrophe, we're not unveiling him until 2021.
All right, much more on the NFL schedule as we continue. But coming up, we have a big basketball guest, both literally and figuratively. The NBA Michael Jordan played in was far different than the game today. We'll talk more about him, and we'll talk about it with Shaquille O'Neal, who'll join us later in the program, and Jim Harbaugh with a suggestion for college football players that would change everything. You'll hear what it is and why it's a pretty good idea as we continue. Get up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
The Last Dance is brought to you by Reese's. And the documentary continues with episodes 7 and 8 on Sunday night, starting at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. They cover, among other things, Michael's first retirement, his baseball stint in Birmingham, and the infamous fight with Steve Kerr at practice. All that and more coming Sunday night on ESPN. So the question is a simple one. How many points a game would Michael Jordan score if he played today? The answer, though, is very complicated because in one very important way, Jordan was playing an entirely different game. Consider that in the 6 seasons in which he won championships, combined, Michael Jordan made 389 three-point shots. Steph Curry made more than that in a single year. Three-point attempts have increased by 167% league-wide since the last year that Jordan played in Chicago. So the math on everything is just completely different. Let's look at it this way. Jordan's highest scoring seasons were from 1986 to 88. In those years, he averaged 36 points a game, and he made 19 threes in 3 years combined. That's in 164 games. Later in his career, when the three became a slightly bigger factor, he actually shot it pretty well. He shot almost 43% in their 72-win season. So we're going to conservatively say he would have made three more per game, which adds 3 points to his average. So now he's at 39 points a game. And there's more. League-wide, since he finished, the pace of the game has increased by 11%. That's that many more possessions. And scoring has jumped 17%. That's in part because of threes, but it's equally because of the way the games are called. The hand check rule began to be enforced about 15 years ago. The Pistons and the Knicks of Jordan's heyday would have been in the penalty before they got off the bus if they were calling it that way. So we're going to split the difference. We're going to add 15% for Jordan. That's another 6 points every night, and so that's where we will leave him. If his prime came in this era, it is reasonable to assume Michael Jordan would have averaged 45 points per game. That's what we think. Let's bring in Jalen Rose and see what he thinks. What do you got, Jay? I like the way you're nodding your head. What do you think?
I agree, Greeny, and I came on the show last week and you asked me that question off the cuff and I said between 45 and 50 because it reminded me so much of how Wilt Chamberlain seemed to be just dropped in a different era when he was averaging 50 and 25. That's what Michael Jordan represented for the era he came in. Think about it. He was MVP of the league while teams were still flying commercial. Okay? The rigor isn't the same. The physicality in today's game isn't the same. And one of the things that you didn't acknowledge, all NBA defense, he will be getting steals. He will be getting out in transition, catching lobs, 3-on-2, 2-on-1, and also getting to the free throw line. I like your number, and I like the math to help you get there.
It would actually be, and you were the one who first said to me, Wilt Chamberlain has his own record book. Wilt Chamberlain has the four highest scoring seasons in history, but only one of them, the year he averaged 50, which was 1962, was the only year that he averaged more than 45. So actually, if Jordan were to average 45 points a game, it would be the second highest scoring season in the history of the sport.
And make it relative. So James Harden is getting close to 40 right now. Michael Jordan averaged 40 in the NBA Finals in the early 90s. He scored 63 in the 80s versus the great Boston Celtics. And yes, there are a handful of great defensive teams in today's game. The Bucks, both teams in LA, the Toronto Raptors. But you know what else it is, Greeny? A lot of bottom feeders. So say against the great teams, he would average 40, no doubt. Against the bad teams, the lottery teams, he would definitely average 50 against those squads. So that's how I got to the number, and I see how you got there as well.
Let me ask you this. The three, because you played against him. You played against Jordan at his very best. Well, at his end, but still when he was the best player in the league. The three-point shot just wasn't then what it is now. Do you believe that if he had played in an era where the three-pointer was as significant as it is now, he would have been a really good three-point shooter?
Absolutely, Greeny. I was actually in the league during all three of those years where they won their second three-peat.
Right.
And the one thing about being a great athlete like Michael Jordan and playing against the late, great Kobe Bryant and Allen Iverson, since the three-point shot wasn't as plentiful, when you played against those guys, now we look at it as it's more possessions, so you get up as many shots shooting 33 or more percent from three. But back then, it was like basket or a foul. So instead of him shooting 100% on dunks, you live with the fact that he's going to take a 40% shot from three-point range. Look at the NBA Finals. When he made those six, Clyde Drexler let him shoot. He was like, go right ahead. I'll live with that because I know if he gets to the paint, that's an 80% plus play.
It wasn't until you sat down and looked at this, or I did in this case with Hembo, and looked at the numbers, looked at the pace, looked at the scoring. The game is totally different, right? The game has fundamentally changed in the last 25 years.
Absolutely it has, Greeny. And here's the one thing. The mental for the players today is still there. The skill is up. They have more skill. But the level of physicality isn't as required by each of the players. There isn't as much bumping. It isn't much grinding. And players are just body type thinner. So Michael Jordan will be attacking the basket, playing three positions on the perimeter, and be as dominant in this era as he was in the era where he shined.
Again, we believe he would have averaged 45 points a game if he played today. Jay, thank you very
much. One more player. It ain't just MJ. The logo, Jerry West. Y'all need to put some respect on his name. They didn't have a three-point shot. Look at the numbers he was putting up back in the day. He was getting 40. He would average around that, too. You probably should do some math on his.
No question. All right, Hembo, we have a challenge for next week. Let's see what Jerry West would have scored. Jalen, have a great weekend. Meanwhile, Sunday night, the weekend will be capped off with episodes 7 and 8, starting 9 Eastern here on ESPN of Last Dance. Again, we'll cover the first retirement, the baseball, and the infamous fight with Steve Kerr at practice. The uncensored versions on ESPN and the ESPN app. The version on ESPN2 is edited for mature language. All right, coming up, you don't have to wait long for a titanic matchup in the NFL next year. Why the game of the year could happen before the leaves start falling. We'll show it to you next. Get up on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Dear sports.
Dear sports.
Dear sports.
Dear sports.
Dear sports.
Where do I begin?
This might be the longest that I've gone without you.
I loved you since I was 12 years old.
You've been part of my life from the time I was a diaper dandy.
You've been a constant companion. You have been with me since I was a little girl when I fell madly in love with you.
For all of my life, you've been the thing that has given structure to my existence, really.
I miss the camaraderie. I miss the competition. I miss the characters.
I miss the escape you give me as a fan.
I miss watching professionals perform at the highest level.
And just let you know how much I can't wait to get back out on the field.
Sports has that amazing ability to bring us all together.
It brought me closer to my brother and sister than I ever could have imagined.
I don't think we ever took you for granted, but I think we know now more than ever just how much you mean to all of us.
You have meant everything to me. I just can never repay you.
You embody so much of the human spirit.
I am not me without sports.
Get yourself ready and rested, because when you come back, we are going to have one amazing party.
I know that you're going to take our breath away.
With love.
Sincerely.
Your best friend.
Love, Dickie V.
Cliff Averill.
Omar.
Chelsea Gray.
Deshaun Jackson.
Jimmy Johnson.
Michael Jr.
Jared Allen.
Love, Nicole.
Love, me.
We are back on Get Up with a look at the NFL schedule. And, guys, let's run the hurry up. Lewis and Bobby. Lewis, what's the game you can't wait to see?
Yeah, that week three Monday night matchup, Chiefs at Ravens. Look, despite the fact that it's Monday night football, which is just the biggest game on the weekend, look, the Chiefs at Ravens, it's the Styles. It's Lamar Jackson. It's that running offense. It's J.K. Dobbins. It's Mark Ingram. It's Marquise Brown against Pat Mahomes, who now has Clyde Edwards-Helaire at running back, which is totally makes this offense illegal, Greeny. It makes it illegal. Somebody should be arrested for drafting him.
Bobby, what's a game you can't wait to see?
Oh, to me, it's got to be Ravens-Browns early in the season. You look at this last year. This was a game that Cleveland was able to get the victory in Baltimore by 15 points. Two of the young quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson, the reigning MVP, Baker Mayfield looking to get back on track. I can't wait to see how this thing's going to look and how it's going to turn out.
Lewis, which team has the toughest start to their schedule?
Yeah, I'm going to say the New England Patriots. Look, those first seven games that they play over the first 8 weeks, look, they go on the road to Seattle, on the road at the Chiefs. Then they have a bye, and then you know, coming off the bye, they play San Francisco and at Buffalo. Those are tremendous tests for Jared Stidham. Although I am a believer and Bill Belichick is a believer, this is a tough start to the season. We're going to see whether or not it's Bill or Tom as far as the success of the Patriots over the past 20 years.
Bobby, which team has the easiest start?
You have to look at the 49ers right there with Jimmy G, and you look at some of the teams that they're playing. They play a lot of young quarterbacks early in the schedule, and that's what you like if you're a team that has a good, solid defense. You can prey on those guys. You can force them to make mistakes. And when you have a running game like the San Francisco 49ers, it's going to be easy then to ground away those games and make sure you come away with victories.
All right, so a very interesting night last night with the release of the NFL schedule. Meanwhile, on the college level, a former NFL quarterback, who of course now is the head coach at Michigan, Jim Harbaugh, wrote an open letter to the college football community calling for college football players to have the ability to enter the NFL draft whenever they're ready and to allow them to go back to school if they go unselected. We'll make a little bit of this required reading. He says, there are early bloomers capable of competing in the NFL and earning a livelihood at an earlier age. The goal would be to create a scenario that makes adjustments for all current and future student athletes that puts the timeline for transition to professional football at their discretion and that of their family. So we've got Bobby and Lewis still with us, and Laura rejoins us here. Laura, it's easy to see that the players would like this. It just gives them optionality. By and large, do you think the coaches, the college football coaches, would be in favor of this?
Greeny, I think they'd like some of it, and I've already heard rumblings even before this open letter was written by Jim Harbaugh that people liked it, especially the fact of guys being able to return back to school. But there are many complications, and as we've talked about, a lot of this has to do with scholarships. Would there be enough scholarships available for a guy who, let's say, is undrafted, decides he wants to come back, and you've already got a freshman class in. You've got early enrollees. You've got all of these things that I think matter in this. And so you'd have to allow for extra scholarships. Would guys be able to come back to only their school where they left? Or would they be able to once again be college football free agents? Would it make the transfer portal totally different because the clock would be started at a different time for some of these guys? When it comes to the amount of complications there, I think that becomes really interesting. Another thing, too, if you go through the process of being drafted or at least putting your name, you know, in that situation and then you're undrafted, but you've already maybe got an agent. You've already been in a situation where you've been training for the combine, which a lot of times is funded by agencies. Would that then fall on these universities to be able to allow these guys to train, those types of things? I think that's where, for a lot of coaches, it becomes complicated, but a lot of players absolutely love it. They love the idea of being able to get paid earlier, and that, of course, is understandable in all of this.
All right. It's for those who don't know, this is an NFL rule that players have to wait 3 years. It's not a college football rule. It was challenged in court by Maurice Claret years ago, and he lost. So, Lewis, as one whose job it is to evaluate this talent for ESPN and at times for teams in the NFL, how would it impact you if guys were allowed to come out of school after 1 or 2 years?
Yeah, Greeny, I think this is not just a physical skill argument or rather discussion. It's also, you know, it's a maturity argument. Look, I think from a physical skills perspective, there are certain positions that obviously players can make the jump much quicker, all right? Running backs, wide receivers, skill position players, players who play out on the perimeter. A lot of times you can see right early on, look, when Herschel Walker and Bo Jackson were freshmen and sophomores at Georgia and Auburn, you could tell, look, they could go to the league right now. But when you're talking about the bigger players, when you're talking about offensive linemen, defensive linemen, those guys really aren't physically developed coming, you know, right out of high school, first year in college. They're not really developed and ready to play the NFL game. So I think from an evaluation standpoint, yeah, you may be looking at this as saying, well, yeah, I'd take some of these skill position players, but for the big guys, it's a little bit different. And then number two, look, when I was 18, 19 years old and I was a freshman, sophomore at the University of Pittsburgh, I can tell you this, I was not ready for the NFL. Now, I may have been ready and willing to accept the money that the NFL was giving me, but from a longevity standpoint, there's no way, especially back in that time, in the late 80s, early 90s, I would have lasted in the NFL given the culture at that time. And as far as going back, you know, if you are undrafted, look, I kind of do like that because as Mike Tannenbaum alluded to, you know, the evaluation process isn't really complete as far as the committee giving you a grade. They don't know many things about you. They're just looking at tape. So a lot of times you're making a decision based off of incomplete information. Now, I know the strain it would potentially put on colleges as far as accepting you back, especially if you have been paid in some form or fashion as you're training to get ready to go to the NFL, as Laura alluded to. But look, I think sometimes, you know, I think to give players a chance to come back and really increase their draft stock after maybe they got some faulty information or maybe they misjudged the market, I don't necessarily see anything wrong with that as long as colleges can make the appropriate adjustments on their end from a scholarship perspective.
What do you think, Bob?
I think there's a number of things that you look at here, Greeny, when you have to break it down. Are there guys that are ready to go coming straight out of college or out of high school, maybe a year or two out? I think there are. I looked at Nick Bosa. I looked at Joey Bosa, Chase Young. These guys were unbelievable athletes. And so then, you know, the question is if guys enter the coming back piece. This is where it gets a little tricky when you talk about roster management for coaches, because right now National Signing Day is the second Wednesday in February. The draft is obviously much later, late March, early May. And so you would probably have to have signing day then be moved after the draft to understand who's coming back, how many spots you have, so that you'll be able to fill out your roster, unless you're going to talk about some sort of scholarship expansion, which, let's be honest, right now, all of these athletic directors are trying to find a way to minimize their budgets, not maximize them. And so I always like to hear the source of this and think about what's their motive. And you look at Jim Harbaugh, he probably looks around and says, how many good players do I have in my quarterback room? How many good players do I have in my wide receiver room? He looks at Ohio State. He looks at Clemson. He looks at Alabama and thinks, wow, they have a lot more depth. They have a lot more players. Maybe if some of these guys leave a little bit earlier, that might open the door then for me to have a little bit more success.
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it. But let me quickly just say, as far as having to change everything, Laura, the point is that if a school takes a, you know, if a kid declares himself he's going to go to the NFL draft and he wants to come back, the school doesn't necessarily have to be obligated. I wouldn't be in favor of that school being obligated to take him back. But the player maintaining his eligibility. So someone might want him. He could get the opportunity to go back and play somewhere. That just makes sense to me.
Yeah, and let's think about it specifically along the lines of Georgia, for instance, this year. Some people have said maybe Jake Fromm shouldn't have gone out this year. He should have stayed in school. Let's say he decides he's going to go back to school. Well, Georgia's already got a transfer quarterback in Jamie Newman already in place. But Jake Fromm looks around and says, all right, I'm going to go somewhere else. I'm going to have an opportunity somewhere else to prove my worth. That would be really interesting. And you wonder about some of these guys who have been very committed to the school that they played at and they love their university, having to find a new spot. Would they be in favor of that? Probably, but it really will be fascinating to see if something like this would happen.
All right, again, Jim Harbaugh with a very interesting idea, and we'll see. It would make a lot of fundamental change to the sport. Guys, great job. Meanwhile, tomorrow, huge day, UFC 249, live on pay-per-view with a stacked card highlighted by Tony Ferguson taking on Justin Gaethje for the Interim Lightweight Championship. We had UFC President Dana White live an hour ago. Here's what he said, looking forward to tomorrow night.
I guarantee you the main event is going to be insane. Stylistically, the way these two match up, and as far as their mentality goes, this fight is going to be one of the best fights of the year. Very tough fight to call who's going to win. You cannot miss this main event. And the entire card is stacked from the first fight of the night to the main event. It should be an amazing night of fights.
And it's coming your way tomorrow night, live on pay-per-view. It's Ferguson and Gaethje. It's also Henry Cejudo against Dominic Cruz, which is a monster fight. The prelims start at 6 Eastern on ESPN and ESPN Deportes. To order the main card in English and Spanish, go to ESPNPlus.com/PPV.
We're all in this together.
I accept the all-in challenge.
I am excited to donate the biggest, baddest UFC fan experience. 2 round-trip business airline tickets to Las Vegas. Sit with me during a matchmaking meeting and help create a fight.
You and I are going to sit in Dana White's special VIP section. It's going to be so amazing.
Go to allinchallenge.com.
You can enter to win the ultimate UFC experience, and 100% of the money raised will benefit organizations providing food to those in need. If you want to participate or to learn more about how these organizations help, visit allinchallenge.com. Coming up, he had all the talent in the world, but was that what made Michael Jordan different? We will ask Shaquille O'Neal, who will join us live in just a moment here on Get Up. But first, we got a little sneaky Hembo time. Here's the question this morning. Which was the last team to beat Michael Jordan in a playoff series? That's the question. The answer's next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We are back on Get Up, and here's the deal. I thought that Hembo was just throwing an easy question at Shaquille O'Neal to try and butter him up, but as it turns out, they just want me to give you the answer. Michael Jordan, the last team to beat him in a playoff series, was led by Shaquille O'Neal. The Orlando Magic beat the Bulls in the 95 Eastern Conference semifinals in 6 games. And that was the series that came after the season in which Jordan came back late in the year in 95 and only played the final 17 games of the regular season. Then they, of course, went on their second three-peat run. The great Shaquille O'Neal will join us in just a matter of moments. Stephen A. Smith is with me this morning here as we wait for Shaq to call in. You know, and Stephen A., we wanted to talk to Shaq a little bit, of course, because he played against Jordan and then played into this era and get his perspective on all these debates that have begun. Hembo and I put together a little statistical analysis of Jordan at his best, his highest scoring seasons. If they had come in this era with the way the game is officiated and the pace of the game and the proliferation of threes, we estimate that Michael Jordan would have averaged 45 points per game, which would have been the second highest of any player ever. Will Chamberlain only one season ever averaged more than that. Well, how does that sound to you, 45 a game for Michael in this era?
Sounds about right. Sounds about right. I don't think anybody would have stopped him. We have to remember that Michael Jordan averaged a career 1.73 pointers per game. Clearly, the game has changed where the advent of the three-point shot, I shouldn't say the advent of it because it existed, but the proliferation of its use combined with the fact that the game is called considerably softer than it was back in the day. The physicality that he had to endure en route to his ascension is not something that he would have to deal with today. So the combination of those two realities, I think easily he could have averaged 45 a game if he wanted to with the number of shots that he was taking. I think it's about right that he would have averaged to 40 to 45 a game. And in certain cases, I think potentially more considering the way they call fouls. You got to remember, how often would Michael Jordan have gotten to the free throw line? Let's not forget that as well. So certainly, I think he would have been even more dominant offensively than he was in the era that he played.
Yeah, it's remarkable. His three highest scoring seasons, or the highest scoring stretch of his career, was from 86 to 88. He averaged 36 points a game. In those three seasons combined, he made 19 three-point shots. In those three seasons combined, Stephen A., so if you look at that and then the pace of the game and the way it's officiated, you know, we say it all the time, but till you sit down and really look at the numbers, it is incredible how much the NBA has changed, the way the game itself has changed in 25 years.
I think one of the things we've got to pay attention to, look at the modern day era and look at the offensive brilliance and genius of a James Harden. This dude is somebody I believe is an absolute magician with the basketball on the offensive end of the floor. But what is one of the things that is a signature of his? It's getting to the free throw line. This dude knows how to draw fouls. Michael Jordan was averaging about 8.2 free throws per game in an era that was clearly physical and allowed a lot of physicality to take place where so many things were not called. We knew that he was a basketball savant. He was brilliant on the basketball court. It wasn't just about his excellence as an athlete, but he was a savant. And so when you look at that, and you take into account the ability to draw fouls, I definitely think that Michael Jordan would have gotten to the free throw line anywhere from 14 to 15 times a game. So you look at that, plus the three-point shot being a bit more prolific, plus his dominance, the aerial assault that he threw at you, and his defensive prowess where he'd lock you down, he'd get steals, things of that nature. There's just no question that he would have been able to do it. He probably would have elected to do it just to show that he could.
You know, while I have you here, and again, we're waiting, hopefully Shaquille O'Neal will join us in a couple of moments, but so much of the discussion here has been Michael and LeBron. We all understand that those two tend to go together. LeBron is so much more a facilitator than Michael ever was. Michael was a Pew scorer. Actually, I'm being told as we speak that Shaquille O'Neal is ready to go. We are pleased to welcome Shaquille O'Neal to Get Up. He is here on behalf of Frosted Flakes Mission Tiger program. Shaq, Stephen A. says hello. Greeny is here. Thank you very much for doing this morning. We appreciate you taking a minute. And I'm going to let you dive right into this conversation because you played against Michael at his best. We just showed a stat. Yours was the last team to ever beat him in a playoff series. How would you envision, what would Michael Jordan be if he played in the game today the way the game is different from the way it was in his era?
He'd average 45, and the league would be complaining about two players. I'd be like, Mike is too good, and the kid named Shaq down in Orlando is too dominant. What are we going to do?
What do you think, Steve? Go ahead.
Well, I agree with him. I definitely agree with him. Listen, go ahead, Shaq.
Who is that?
That's Stephen A. Smith. That's the name
it's
probably
me, man. Don't act like you don't know it's me. You know it's me, man. What's going on?
You've been there, man. I miss you, brother.
I missed you, too, bro. But definitely, Greeny, Shaq would have been most dominant. No question. Shaq was the most dominant force that I saw in the modern era, and Michael Jordan would have been the best player, without question. And the difference between a Michael Jordan compared to a James Harden, we're not thinking about defense because we know there's no comparison there. But offensively, even though James Harden is incredibly dominant, the amount of dribbles that he utilizes with the basketball, Michael Jordan would not have handled it that way. He would have been much more in attack mode with considerably less dribbling of the basketball.
Shaq, let me ask you this. Earlier this week, and it got a lot of attention, and Stephen A. weighed in pretty strongly on it here, Mark Jackson said on the air that players of the era in which Michael was at his apex when you first came into the league were cut from a different cloth than the players are today. When you hear that, as one who is still around the game as much as you are, what do you think?
There's some truth to that, and I didn't realize that. Kenny Smith says something on the show one day. He said, we are all products of our environment. So I was like, what are you talking about, Kenny? Because, you know, Kenny likes to babble. But when he broke it down, it made sense. He said, okay, when he was growing up, he was watching guys like Tony Archibald, how they played. So, you know, he developed his game after that. When I was growing up, I was watching Patrick Ewing, Ronnie Stickley, guys like that in the middle, they play hard. They play tough. I was watching the Bad Boys. So I patterned my game after that. So then when I came in and started beating these centers up and everybody wanted to pick and pop, that's when you got guys like Dirk and KG and even Kevin Duncan. So the guys that are playing now, they didn't watch me. They watched Duncan and guys like Dirk, guys that step out. And that's why they play the way that they play. Like even when I'm working out with my son, I want to be like, bang him out, bang him out, bang him out. But that's not how they play anymore. So I allowed him to go out and, work on the face-up jumper, work on the James Harden sidestep three-point and all that stuff because he's a product of his environment. The guys that he's watching in the NBA, this is what they do. So it really is some truth to what Mark Jackson said.
Steve?
He's absolutely right. I mean, definitely you're a product of your environment. There's no question about it. And the folks that you watched up emulating ultimately is what you grab a hold of and you take that to another level. Connie Hawkins came before Dr. J. Julius Erving, along with David Thompson, by the way. And then after Dr. J. Julius Erving, here comes MJ. Well, what would MJ have had to emulate as great as he was, as phenomenal as he was? It was taken to another level by and large because of the people who preceded him, the Dr. J. Holidays, David Thompson's, Connie Hawkins, and guys like that. When we think about Steph Curry, well, guess what? He had his father before him. Oh, by the way, there was the Dale Ellis's of the world. Later on, it was Ray Allen. Back in the Dale Ellis days, along with Mr. Curry himself, you also had guys like Ricky Pierce. Remember downtown Freddie Brown from the Seattle Supersonics in the 1970s, or in the late 70s, early 80s. All of those things are byproducts. You peel from that to learn what greatness to emulate and ascend towards by virtue of those who came before you.
Stephen A., thanks a million for jumping in. I have to let you go to get ready for your show. And I have one more question. So, again, First Take is coming up in a few minutes. And, Shaq, I'll just have one more question for you, because as we have done Last Dance here, it's gotten so many people talking about the game and its historical place with Michael Jordan. So I guess I would just simply ask you, for those who've never heard your opinion, if I say Shaq, who's the greatest player ever? What is the answer?
I'm going to say Michael Jordan.
And why would you put Michael first?
Because, you know, Michael paved the way for all the great guys we have now. And 6-0 in the finals, without a legitimate big man, went through a lot, took a year off, came back and won 3 more in a row. He's definitely the greatest player. And I think if you ask, you know, the other guys that are brought up, I'm sure that they will say it too. Scottie Pippen made a great point. You can't say I'm the greatest player. You have to let your peers and everyone else say who the greatest player is. And I just want to say that the guys like you and Steve, and I appreciate you guys. This is the first time in my lifetime I've been without sports. And you guys have always done a wonderful job. But I really appreciate you guys more now as I'm sitting here doing nothing, watching you guys talk every morning. Just want to say I appreciate you for always taking care of me, especially you, Steve, and I. I love all the guys at ESPN, and if anybody's family has been affected by COVID-19, my heart goes out to you, and I appreciate you guys.
It's nice of you to say. Shaquille O'Neal, again, who's with us this morning on behalf of Frosted Flakes Mission Tiger Program. I'm out of time. Shaq, thanks a million. Be safe, okay, big fella? And hopefully we will see you again really soon. Look forward to the NBA coming back and see you guys having fun in the studio. I have to leave it there. I got to run. Show's going to end because First Take is coming up in a moment. Tom Brady and Drew Brees face each other week one, which future Hall of Famers under more pressure get off to a good start. That and more with First Take next on ESPN. My thanks again to Shaq for jumping in here this morning, and most importantly, my thanks to you for getting up with us today and all week long. It was quite a week of sports. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back in better than ever Monday. First Take starts now.